while we study physical workspace, we're very agile in where we actually do our work from. So we have an office that we really like to come to. But we had all the tools in place to leave and work from anywhere remotely. It was like we decided on Tuesday afternoon, like we should probably close the office down, and everyone just picked all their stuff up and went home.
Yes.
Nobody had paperwork. Like, we don't have paperwork. We just have computers, and we had all the tools already ready. So if there was a silver lining or a blessing, I guess it would be that that was not hard for us. We didn't spend 1 minute thinking about how to remote work.
Hey there, friend. It's Stephanie Crevins, your host of the Hot Mess Hotline, where we help mid-level leaders learn to think like entrepreneurs. In this episode, you're going to hear from Sam Julka. She is the president and founder of Doris Research here in Indianapolis, Indiana, but they work with clients across the country. Sam started her career in Indianapolis as an interior designer at RJE Business Interiors before returning to school in 2010 to earn her master's in fine arts in design thinking and design research. She founded Doris Research in 2012, and since founding this company, she's worked with hundreds of organizations in many different industries across the country. In 2019, Doris began the journey of franchising and their operations, and now they operate franchises in at least three locations across the country. She is an alumnus of the 41st Stanley K. Lacey Executive Leadership Class and was named a member of the IBJ's 40 Under 40 class in February of 2019. Friends, Sam is a powerhouse, and she really knows what she's doing as it relates to work and research and what it takes for people to collaborate effectively in our workplaces. I'm excited for you to listen into this episode with Sam, where you're going to learn about her lessons from the global pandemic in 2020 so far, and what our people, our teams, our workplaces need from leadership and what they need now. Sam, let's dig into this hot mess. What has come up in your career that you want other mid-level leaders to learn about based on your experience as a CEO and as someone who's doing some good work in the world?
Great question. And I've reflected a lot about this in preparation for our conversation today. It's interesting because I'm sure people don't have these thoughts all the time, but a lot of times when I was early on in my career or early on in starting Doris, the company that I founded in 2012, mm-hmm. I would have thoughts of, man, like I should really be facing some adversity. Like I probably don't really deserve to do what I'm doing. I haven't really faced any adversity, which is kind of a strange thought, but I would always be like, you know, you hear people's like success stories and they went through the hero's journey and they faced a lot of adversity and what, you know, whatever it was. And I didn't have that. So I felt like it's so wrong, but it felt like something was missing. Like there should be something adverse here.
It should be harder.
It should be harder than this. This yes. seems like too many doors are being opened. Yeah. And so when you asked me about this, I couldn't really think of anything other than really the current situation that we're in, which is, you know, dealing with a business that had to make some drastic changes in mid to late March of 2020 based on the world shutting down. I couldn't think of any other, you know, quote unquote hot messes that I've gotten myself into. I feel like either I've been very lucky or I've risk managed my way away from those sorts of things somehow. But, you know, we are an organization that studies people in an office. And in late March, people went away from an office and still there's no good endpoint of when that might change, when people might come back. They are coming back. I can tell you there are people in offices again. We are working yes. with them. We're also working with people that are not in offices.
And just for listeners' sake, so we're recording this in September 2020. So for a little bit of context, you know, Sam, walk us through what the latter half of March was like for you at Doris as a leader. What were your thoughts? What was racing through your head then?
That's a good question. I think we were trying to figure out like, okay, this will last for like 2 weeks, right? Like, you know, like there's no way this carries on for 6 months. And I think we were, you know, I was having conversations with, you know, people that were in my network that were scientists or pharma people. And I was like, okay, when is this going to be over? You know, trying to almost harvest some kind of answer to when, you know, when were people going to go back into offices? When were people going to be back where we could be doing the work that we normally did? So we were searching for answers, but we were also trying to protect the business at that point.
Yes.
So we had a really strong pipeline going into 2020. We had a lot of great projects that were on the books that were about ready to close. And we had projects we were working on. We had just come off of, we had a great 2019.
Yes.
We'd finished our largest, most successful project out in Silicon Valley. And then we'd also franchised our business. At the end of 2019, we had a franchise offering out on the table. And we'd closed our first franchise and we had two more that were coming in. So we had a lot, like Doris had a lot going for it. 2020 was going to be a great year for us from a financial standpoint. I would say 2020 has been a great year, just in general, like nobody lost an arm or anything. So looking at March of 2020, our project load completed. What we were working on, we finished in either late March or into April, just kind of how the cards were all laid out on the table. Most of our projects were finishing up. We didn't have anything that was like had just teed up or just, I guess, teed off and started. Mm-hmm. And like I said, we had a number of things that were supposed to start. And so within a probably week and a half time frame, we probably had, I don't know, maybe somewhere between 10 and 20, you know, responses from these potential clients or prospects that we had saying, you know, we'll talk to you in 2021. So this is March.
Really, that's painful.
Yeah. So what do we do? Like, we study office and spaces and nobody's there. Everyone left. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we had to figure out quickly what we were going to do. So like I said, we had to figure out how to protect the business. So we effectively furloughed the entire company. I didn't even know what a furlough was. Mm. The word furlough to me was like something my grandpa did when he was a blue collar worker and, you know, I don't even know if he would have been furloughed. It just seemed so like the word itself seemed so like unusual in my world. It wasn't something we'd considered ever. I had to figure out what that was and what did that legally mean? And, you know, why was that the best choice for us?
Yes.
Because we wanted to retain, we have such talented people that work for us, work with me. So we wanted to retain them, but we also, they knew, I think we all knew we had to protect our business. And so we didn't have any business coming in the door for very obvious reasons. It was by no fault of anybody. Like it wasn't that a sales team didn't do their job.
Right.
It wasn't that researchers didn't perform. It was just, sorry, people, like nobody's in an office. You cannot do the work that you are actually designed to do.
Oh, yes. And there's no one to, sometimes blame makes us feel better, right? If you can put the blame, the stress somewhere, but there was nowhere to put it because it was this invisible enemy that we didn't know how long it was going to last. We didn't know how long it was going to impact us, but you had to do what you had to do. I mean, you had to preserve the business.
Yes, kind of talking about that. It wasn't that one person had failed at their job in any way and you could lay that person off or terminate that position. It was, we're all going down.
Hold on.
Yeah, like there's no other choice here, kind of.
Yes.
In the matter. I mean, probably the alternative, and when I say protect the business, Doris doesn't have debt. We've never had debt. Mm-hmm. And so we had access to funding to some degree to carry, like, let's say we wanted to, you know, carry through a few months of no revenue. We could have, but it would have probably been detrimental long term.
Yes.
To not just the, like, it would have been detrimental. It would be detrimental right now for us. And it's something that we have the luxury of not having to deal with right now.
Yeah.
Which, if somebody could have explained that to us, probably in late March, it would have seemed more logical what we were doing. But it was so unknown. You know, it was such a, we're going to have to do this. And we don't really know how long it's going to be. We don't really know what that looks like. We don't have any answers to this right now. So it was hard. I mean, that was hard.
Yeah. It was almost like to stop the bleeding, we've just got to like put the tourniquet on it and hope that when we take it off, something will start flowing again. Not to be such like
scientific morbid. And medical
Yeah. But I mean,
it was like that. Stop the bleeding. Yeah. We cannot have expenditures when we don't have income.
Yes.
You know, we had some income, but it wasn't where the company needed to be to function properly. So yeah, so it was tough. I mean, we were in a very unknown black hole of a place that we didn't exactly know. We didn't know what we were going to do at that point in time. We just knew we had to, like you said, stop the bleeding. That was like step one.
Mm. As a first-time CEO, you mentioned, I didn't even know what the word furlough meant. I mean, you're figuring it out as you go too. As a first-time CEO, what were some of those other stressors that were coming up for you? Kind of the first, you're like, whew, all right, I accepted the responsibility of this title. Let's do this. What other ones?
I'm trying to think about that answer. I mean, so I'm a trained researcher. That's my job. And then I also, I'm an entrepreneur. So I run a business.
Yes.
And so a lot of my job nowadays, day to day, is I don't do research really. Like that's not what I do. I'm like a business administrator. So I had understood, you know, our cash flow, and I knew how to watch that, and I knew how to make good decisions financially for the business, when to hire, when to do the right things based on what we're doing. So luckily, I think at the time I had the resources in place to go ask the right questions. I almost am like, it was fortuitous, the types of people that were around at the time that maybe wouldn't have been 12 months earlier.
Mm.
We had the right banker. We had recently switched our payroll company, and that was a huge leg up for us.
Oh, good.
We switched from kind of a standard just payroll company that didn't really do many added services for us to, I'm somewhat dyslexic and I get these letters backwards, but I think it's a PEO, and they basically kind of co-employ our staff so that we can run insurance through them with a larger group of people, but also they help us with HR services. The company that we work with is called WorkSmart. They're amazing. I love them. And they helped us. Like, I would call and be like, okay, we're kind of in this situation. They'd be like, well, here's three options you have. Like, this is what this means. This is what this means. And this is what this means. Mm-hmm. If you do this, this is going to be an outcome. If you do that, you know, and so we could run through scenarios quickly. So we had that, which was incredibly helpful. And they were running because everybody was in this situation. Many people were in this situation, I should say.
Yes.
They were running weekly, webinars, I guess, that I could log on to and learn about. And they were things I had never considered. Like, what's the difference between a furlough and a layoff? And how do you handle insurance in these situations for your staff? And, you know, things that like mattered at the time to try to figure out very quickly.
Yes.
What, you know, if you furlough somebody, can they work hours? What is the difference between salary cutbacks? You know, things like that. So I had that. Like I said, I had a great banker. And then I have a business partner who doesn't work inside our business day to day like I do or like anyone else on our staff does, but he has connections and access to people that I probably normally wouldn't, because he runs a few other businesses.
Mm.
And then he's tied into probably bigger networks of business owners. So he would call me daily and say, okay, we need to go, you know, we were trying to figure out, do we want to get a PPP loan? Do we think there were other small business loans that we were looking at? So it was a matter of trying to figure out what's the best avenue here. And then like, what kind of paperwork are we looking at that we need? Cause we just had this sort of gut feeling that there wasn't going to be enough money for everybody in the beginning. Right. So we strategized, how do we get in front of the line, like as fast as possible with this so that we can, you know, get things back going again. So I had those resources that were very helpful in kind of navigating through what you call a hot mess. I mean, it was like uncharted territory for us.
Yes.
So I would say that was, you know, the start of all this is just trying to get, kind of get on a little bit of solid footing when it comes to what are the financials going to look like for the next, you know, few weeks or months.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it sounds like and you said, you know, the resources at your disposal, the people, it was fortuitous that your network had grown in the way that it had when you were successful. And then when things weren't so rosy, those people really stepped up to the plate and were resources and trusted advisors for you, because none of us have this all figured out by ourselves. None of us can navigate a situation like this, which was such dire, which such like such stakes at hand. You know, I mean, so many of us were so afraid of losing our business in those first few weeks and months just because of all of the unknowns and the uncertainty.
Right.
You had people at your disposal who really stepped up their game and were in there with you and guided you.
Yeah. Like, I'm trying to like kind of reflect in action on it. I probably hadn't thought about that, or maybe I had in real time, you know, thought, wow, aren't we lucky here? But isn't that what we'd want leadership to do?
Yes.
I'm trying to like allow reading between the lines, but don't we want leaders to surround themselves with smart people a little bit so that the smart people can help you make the right choices, do the right things?
Well, and I think
help people.
In business, having people that you can lean on, whether or not you're paying them for it, like that's what makes the world worthwhile. Like this is the thing that gives meaning to our lives, is to know that you can call your PEO, you can call WorkSmart, you can call your banker, and they're just there to serve you.
Yeah.
When shit gets really hard. Like to me, that's why I do this work. Like, yes, I want the money. Yes. But at the end of the day, I do this work because it has deep meaning to develop connection and bring people together and solve real problems in real time. And when we add our layers of expertise to it, it turns out better than if we try to go it alone.
Right. Yeah. And this experience, the people that I've been able to work through this challenge with and the relationships I've built inside of them, God, I'll be loyal to them for a long time.
Yes. That's awesome.
Just, you know, it's just different than your day to day. Like, here's my payroll, run it, you know?
Yes.
It's different. It's just a different conversation when they're helping you to that degree.
Yeah. Yep.
This season of the Hot Mess Hotline is brought to you by my Hot Mess Quiz. One of the common lessons that my clients learn during coaching is how to really evaluate a problem, dissect it for clarity, and then take action on the tasks that really move the needle. The Hot Mess Quiz can bring you that focus too. As a leader, your work life is full of, well, work. But according to Pareto, 80% of that work isn't even impactful. If you need to create growth and change, you need to focus in on what truly matters and what will drive new results. Take the Hot Mess Quiz by clicking on the link below, which is stephaniecrevins.com/hotmessquiz. You know, just like this podcast promised, and this is in the real world too, what happens when people stop being polite and start getting real? That's what you're going to get in this report. It's going to be tailored to your business hot mess to tell you exactly where to focus your efforts first, and then how to bring your team along to get the change that you need to create. Go to stephaniecrevins.com/hotmessquiz. Don't wait another minute to start becoming the pro troublemaker you've always wanted to be. So you had these guidance counselors, if you will, through a tough time to help you navigate it. When were you able to bring your folks back after furlough?
Yeah, so
quickly. Or maybe it happened in stages, or, you know, walk us through
a little bit. But I mean, they're all back now, and they have been for quite a while. It seems like almost that was so long ago when we talk about this, but really, I mean, I was thinking about it this morning. That was only 6 months ago. And we probably have, if we're lucky, you know, only maybe 6 months until we're looking at maybe some semblance of widespread, you know, vaccine or whatever is taking care of people.
Yeah.
Or preventative actions or whatever.
Another set of unknowns.
Another set of unknowns. I don't know how long we'll be in this. And I don't know that anybody fully knows yet. Yeah. So we were down for about, I think, 4 weeks before we were able to kind of get back, bring people back.
Okay.
So if you furlough people, it's illegal to have them do any kind of work. So we cut ties, you know, I'm not going to, like, you can't look at your emails. You can't, like, everything was forwarded to me.
Yes.
Because I'm the owner, I could still work. Probably because I wasn't going to, it was unlikely that I was going to sue my own business. So I worked. Yeah. So I, while under furlough, I maintained anything that we needed, which was really kind of crazy because there were things I hadn't done in a long time that I had to do. Like I had to write some research reports for us that I hadn't done in a while. And I had to go in and like analyze the data and write and actually produce the report and communicate with the client. Like I had to take over those things that needed to happen. There weren't as many. It was manageable. I could do it, but I was all alone. I didn't have a buddy then to be like, you know, hey, what do you think about this piece of data? Like, how should we, you know, it's just like, do it.
Yes.
And then I had some franchises that I had a franchise we were training. So I had to pick that up, which isn't my normal. It's not normally what I'm doing day to day. So I had those things. Well, and then meanwhile, trying to figure out how to get the business kind of back up and running and figure out our go forward plan. Because I really don't think any of us thought it wouldn't pick back, like that we wouldn't come back to work. You know, I think hopefully everyone thought we'll figure out how to get through this. We just need a minute to figure it out.
Yes.
While everyone is in crisis mode. So yeah, we were down about a month and then we were first in line for a PPP loan. We got it like right away. It wasn't like no questions asked. Here's your money in your bank account at all. We had the minute like our bank's portal open to accept our paperwork, we had it in.
That's fantastic.
There was no question about it. We knew all the right things we needed to have. We had engaged all the right people. And so we got that like stable ground we needed. And then we created a plan to bring everyone back, but we knew that it probably wasn't smart to bring everyone back day one. So we kind of phased in, I think, over a series of maybe 2 or 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm. And when you say back, do you mean back to your physical office, back online is working, or both?
Back online is working.
Okay.
So we were still at home. It's interesting at Doris, while we study physical workspace, we're very agile in where we actually do our work from. So we have an office that we really like to come to. But we had all the tools in place to leave and work from anywhere remotely. It was like we decided on Tuesday afternoon, like we should probably close the office down and everyone just picked all their stuff up and went home.
Yes.
Nobody had paperwork. Like we don't have paperwork. We just have computers and we had all the tools already ready. So if there was a silver lining or a blessing, I guess it would be that was not hard for us. We didn't spend 1 minute thinking about how to remote work. We already knew how to do that. So yeah, so when I say we came back, I mean we started work up again, where we brought our employees back to work, myself included. So I had been working, but under furlough. So then I came back officially as an employee, along with two members of our leadership team inside of Doris. There's 7 of us. We did that because we thought what needed to happen, I think, in the first week was that the leadership team needed to figure out what the rest of the group was going to do when they came back. So that when they came in, that there were tasks, activities, you know, things in place that people were going to start working on.
Mm-hmm.
And we even slow rolled back up. Like, I think we went up like 50% and then maybe up to 75%. So like we kind of gradually walked back into it. And I think because it was so unknown still, like we didn't want to just say, hey, 7 full salaries back on, like, let's figure out how we're going to do this and spend this PPP money appropriately here and make sure we get something that's going to last, you know, more than 8 weeks.
Yes.
And so we brought on leadership. Then we brought on, our next move was people who could sell or were in some kind of marketing role. So that group came on, and then our last group to come on was the researchers, or the people that you know, execute our work. So it's almost the opposite of a roll down. Roll down the last person out would have been a researcher. Roll up the last person out or in was a researcher, because we needed to go find the work for them and figure out what work they were going to do. Which I don't know if that's right or wrong, but that's what we did. So
there is no right and wrong. It's you just figure it out.
That's true. So yeah, so we did that. And then we kind of knew we had to innovate right away. Because we were, you know, we had been given kind of a second life, but it wasn't like people were working in their offices yet. Like that wasn't, this was late April.
Yes. We weren't wanting to talk about, I mean, at that point, we weren't even talking about coming back. It was more, if we ever come back, it might be 2021. And then the news is rolling in about Facebook delaying.
Yeah.
Well, you know, all the big companies that
big
we
corporate. Yeah, yeah. It was not, I mean, they were, you know, we're out. We're out this year. We're out into next year. So we had to figure out, well, what kind of business are we at this point? Like, what do we, who do we serve and what do we do? Like, what do we, what problem are we trying to solve for somebody now? So we knew, or I like to say we, but I think in this one instance, I'll take ownership of this one. I knew that when we would get this, when we would get this kind of second chance, that what we were, I guess, maybe going to be good at, or what we were maybe going to be able to do, was we were the people that were going to help people come back into offices, or we were going to be the people that were going to study how it was going for the people at home and try to figure out how to make it better for them, or what, you know, some combination of both. So that was it. Like, that was what we were banking. You know, could we pivot enough quickly enough to study something different in a different, using different research methods. I mean, we are very traditionally inside offices. We talk to people, we look at their faces. I mean, that's kind of what's unique and special about Doris. We aren't a survey-based company. We get in there, when we do research, we're observational, we're interviewing people, we're asking questions. Like, it is using kind of the human computer. It's not big data from a Watson. It's big data from Sam in your office looking at what you're doing.
Yes.
Or Emily or somebody on our team. And so we couldn't do that. That was out. So we had to figure out, how are we going to collect, you know, we're researchers, we like data. How are we going to collect data, and how are we going to use the data to help people? So I think step one for us was really just, it doesn't matter if people are going to pay us to do anything right now. All we need is data. Like, we will find our path if we have data. And there was no time to waste. There was no time to go on some kind of like sales blitz that maybe in 3 months from now, someone, you know, will say, sure, you can collect data from our group. Like, that wasn't what was going to happen. We were going to start collecting data, come hell or high water, like yesterday. You know, that was going to happen. And so we did that. So we, again, not a survey company, but we went to work on designing a free survey that we were sending to any company that would take it. Take the survey, send it to your, we want you to send it to your people. We're going to write a report for you. We'll meet with your leadership team, whoever you want. We'll tell you what this report says, what, you know, what our findings are based on your unique population here. And that kind of caught fire for us. So we started to do these. We would have, you know, in April, May, we did them into June. We would have a couple of these going a week, two, three, four, and we'd be talking to leaders and telling them what we're finding. And they were finding their way. We found our way through various channels into organizations across the country. In the end, I think we might have engaged 26 states, almost 1,000 people took it, maybe 20 companies, very many different industries, but we had all this, but now we had all this data that nobody else really had, especially sort of at our level. Like, some of the maybe very large architectural firms would have data, or very large commercial real estate firms would have some, you know, data that they were they were grabbing, but we, you know, we small little Doris in Indianapolis, we had stuff to talk about with people and mm-hmm. we knew we needed that. So just, I guess just doing what we knew how to do. We knew how to look at data. We knew how to collect data. This was collecting it in a different way, but it was still data, and it kind of made us happy too, right? Like we could come to work and have something to work on, something that was why we wanted to come to work anyway.
Yes. Gave you a purpose. I love, Sam, what you said, the questions that you started asking as you brought people back. You know, I just wrote down, what kind of business are we? What problem do we solve now? I mean, as a leader, as the CEO, you put a stake in the ground and said, y'all, this is our mission moving forward. We know we're researchers. Let's start researching so we have the data that we need to build the company that the world needs now, because we know what we have been doing isn't going to fit into the world moving forward.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I would imagine everyone asked those questions at that time. Like, how are we relevant anymore?
Oh, no. What you've done is incredibly insightful. It's visionary, like a leader should be. It's missional, like a leader should be. You know, other company responses that I heard at that time was, well, we got to double down on what we have been doing, because we know that works. Now they didn't know that worked in the new environment, or we've just got to paralyze ourselves. We're just going to play possum, if you will, in the economy and hope that we're still alive when it opens back up. I mean, oftentimes in the face of uncertainty, people don't ask powerful questions. That's why they need me. But in the face of uncertainty, they get paralyzed or they spend so much time in the data that they don't move forward. All right, let's pause the conversation between Sam and me right here before we dig into the second part of our conversation. I don't know about you, but when I'm talking to Sam, what really stood out to me about our conversation was a big pivot for her was this call to mission, this call to a big, powerful question that Doris and her team needed to answer right now. I want you to think about, before you dig into the second part of the conversation with Sam, I want you to think about, what big question, what missional effort do you need to redirect yourself towards now as you move forward as a leader? All right, I'll see you soon, my friend.